Well, good evening. You okay?
Who knows? I'm here, and I'm very grateful.
I'm glad you're here. There's some healing. Make it better. So this is an interesting chapter. It's about light in utter darkness. And he immediately starts talking about God. So it's what comes up every time Buddhism comes up. People say Buddhism is atheistic. You know, there's no God. Or Buddhism is philosophical and posits a philosophical kind of essences that can be discussed in very deep and profound ways. There are many ways of talking about Buddhism and what Buddha taught, but Roshi is talking here about it in terms of the light and darkness. That in terms of light and dark, especially in terms of this poem, why do you keep saying the same thing over and over again, that what we see and what we experience as different things is all sustained by something that we feel and that we know and experience and yet have no name for. And as soon as we start to name it, it becomes another thing. And it isn't a thing. So it's very, very hard to express. When I was a little girl and I heard the ladies after church would stand around and be talking about God, and I would think, like, how can they talk about it like that? It makes it so small. It just squeezed the whole thing into this tiny little word. It just was way too little for what I could feel was what it was talking about. So that's what the darkness is being expressed in here, is that not knowing the mysterious side, the side we feel and know so well, especially with a sitting practice, when we get out of our own way and out of the story, then we begin to feel the wholeness of everything, the aliveness of everything. But once we begin to talk about it, it gets all messed up again. So it's a very tricky business, and Roshi does a pretty good job, actually. Darkness refers to the absolute where there is no exchange value or materialistic value or even spiritual value. Isn't that interesting? There's no value. We can't say, oh, this is the best, because the best is always compared to something. We can't even say it's the most, because there isn't any most of it. The world that our words and thinking mind cannot reach. Living in the realm of duality, we must have good understanding of the absolute, which we may think of as a deity. But in Buddhism, we do not have any particular idea about a deity. Idea is the word here. The absolute is the absolute because it is beyond our intellectual or dualistic thinking. We cannot deny this world of the absolute. Many people say that Buddhism is atheism because we have no particular idea of God. We know there is the Absolute, but we know it is beyond the limit of our thinking mind, so we don't say so much about it. That is what we mean by darkness. But as far as light is concerned, he says that we must understand the meaning of it as not just there is this, and that, but that the isness of everything belongs to everything else. So if you say, his example is, I have two hands. But the truth is, I don't have hands. Hands are a part of this whole being, and this whole being is a part of the whole being. So we distinguish things, but only as a temporary kind of understanding of how we experience things in the world, as we are, as everything else is. We have almost two abilities, you could say, two mental abilities to understand how things exist, how we exist. He says, because we have some standard about the light and the dark, we say light and dark, but actually light is darkness, and darkness is light, because it depends on who's speaking. As he says, if you live in a cave, dark is really, really dark, but if you live in a sort of gloomy place, that's dark. You think that's very, very dark. But compared to the cave, it's not dark. So it's all relative. And not understanding the relativity of our experience like that, it's kind of a disaster, because we begin to think that our experience, as we name it and hold on to it and identify with it, is the truth of it. And he's saying truth is something beyond that. We have many little temporary relative truths, but the truth we can't even say. So he talks about an example of food that we eat, that food on the plate is light. Food is a thing that we can experience. It's lit up, it has color and taste, and we swallow it down, and then it turns all the different kinds of food into one thing in our tummy, he says. Seems funny, an old Japanese gentleman to call it a tummy, but... And when it's in your tummy, it's darkness. But even in darkness, there's still lettuce and soup and everything. So the food is the same, only as it changes, its form does start to work. In utter darkness, things happen that way. In light, you feel good. You feel as if you have a special dish in front of you. But the food is not serving its purpose yet. It has to go inside. When you don't know what you are doing, actually you are acting fully with a full mind. That's the time. The time when you forget yourself. When you don't know anymore. You're just doing it. When you are thinking, you're not yet working. When you start to work, both the dark side and the light side are there together. course, they're always there together, whether we're thinking or not. But our experience is very different if we allow ourselves not to know and to drop the self-consciousness in order to do the work, be the work. He talks about friendship and the way that we meet a friend, either as in the light or as not knowing. If we meet a friend assuming we know this person and have a superficial knowledge, assumption about the person that we're meeting, we don't really know that person. And the best way to know is to assume we don't know and stop and pay attention and begin to connect. Of course, that's our practice. That's how we live with each other. We stop and wait and learn and don't assume that we know. We should not cling to the idea of darkness or light. We should not cling to the idea of equality or differentiation. Most people, once they have a grudge against someone, find it almost impossible to change their feeling. But if we're Buddhists, we should be able to shift our minds from bad to good and from good to bad. So then he goes into the earwigs again. Because, of course, you might say earwigs are bad, but then if we begin to say, oh, but they're living creatures just like we, and then we can get a whole relative and more distant and more compassionate view. And really the compassionate view is a combination of dark and light. It's really, really seeing what's here and not knowing at the same time, allowing ourselves to be open to and not know what it is that's before us. So here's the earwig part. He said, if karma doesn't exist, then you may say whatever I do is okay. Don't worry about it. Just carry on. That's what the hippies said. Life is good. He said, it means you're caught by the idea of darkness. The other day we discussed why we kill earwigs. We have to kill them, but that doesn't mean that it's all right to kill them. It is not all right. We should understand our activity from both sides. If you don't feel so good about it, you should make more effort. You should find out how to protect the vegetables without disturbing the earwigs. But you should not waste too much time or your practice will suffer. First things first. He said, truth is truth. There are not two truths, only one. In Zen, sometimes they talk about this whole situation as two truths. There's the truth of the light and the truth of the darkness. But actually, it's not two. Then they say, not one, not two. Because that just leaves us in limbo, which is really where it is. It's really a kind of limbo situation. He said, when you understand truth only with your mind, you may feel that it is the truth. But compared to your actual activity or feeling or life, The truth that you understand with your mind is not the actual truth. Because our actual life is not as easy as our thinking, it is easy to be convinced that some idea we have is the perfect truth. Yet for us it is not true, because that kind of thinking does not accord with our actual life. That creates a lot of problems when we think about the perfect life and then we look at our own life. We can generate a lot of unhappiness making that kind of comparison when it's not true. So there are two ways of understanding the truth. One way is intellectual truth. We understand, we say. But that understanding is just an intellectual understanding. Whether we understand it or not, truth is truth. Whether Buddha appeared in this world or not, truth is truth. In the second way, something may be true for a Buddha or an enlightened person, but for us it's not true. We cannot accept the fundamental truth as it is, so for us it doesn't seem to be true. That is the truth we work with in our practice. From the viewpoint of our practice, truth is not always true. So a student asks, do they remain separately, darkness and light? Or are they the same thing? And he says, they are the same thing, but our lazy mind separates darkness from light. To plunge into the light, to find darkness in light, to find Buddha nature in perfect zazen is our way. Whether you are sleepy or not, good students or bad students, you should sit. That is the only way to have darkness in your bright dualistic practice. So, discussion, questions.
Why did you choose light and darkness as the term that kind of throws you off? Seems like a value judgment. You know, we always think of darkness as the shadow.
I think it is the shadow. In Jungian terms, it is the lack of intellectual consciousness. The part that we don't see. The part that, unless we're very careful, we actually don't allow ourselves to experience.
The subconscious.
And the only way we know things is when light shines. If you turn off the lights, if it's really dark, you don't see anything. That is a disturbing experience to people. If they're in absolute dark for a long time, it's very unnerving.
Right.
No, it's a punishment, really.
Hallucinate.
Yeah, they hallucinate. Because we can't live without the light to give us the experience of things. Because we too are a thing. Which experiences the whole of it.
So it's more emptiness, the darkness that he's talking about. It's not the bright light, the experience of complete integration of everything.
Well, sometimes it's a complete integration of everything as in a sense of boundlessness.
Yes.
Of not defining, of having no word for.
Right.
because that's the way our mind works. We always want to have a word for it, and that nails it down. But if we don't have a word for it, you know, it's the Korean practice of don't know mind. That unlatches the mind from its clinging to things so that we can experience the boundlessness of.
I just think darkness is a poor term, but of course any term would be.
I think so. Any term would be.
Yeah. Like boundless middle.
Yeah, well, we should write our own poems about this. Find our own words for it.
In the past, I've heard you use the word provisional, and when you were talking about the kind of the temporary or the relative nature of everything, that word kind of came up. I'm not even sure if I totally understand what provisional is, or if you would use it in this circumstance to describe things as being sort of just.
Everything is given and nothing stays the same. So it's all providing this moment on this moment, which shifts and changes to something else.
Uh-huh. So it is, in a sense, it is. I mean, that is a word that we can use in this.
Mm-hmm.
But all those other words are okay too, because it's all shifting and
it's
changing.
All temporary. Yeah. Yeah, we like to hold on to make it stay put, but it won't do it.
Or even if we don't like to, we do it anyway, and then if we make it into a big, terrible thing.
Yes.
And
yes, it's a great loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A drama.
Yeah, yeah. Drama. There's one other aspect of this too that. There are two kind of ways of doing Zen, one of which is almost scientific, of doing Shikan Taza and being quite direct about the practice. And the other is a softer way of a devotional way that we can experience also, so that some of the so-called ritual is about being able to express with our mind and body this untalkabout ability of everything in a way that we can express ourselves, whether it's arranging flowers or lighting a candle are offering incense. You know, all of those things, if we give it the intention of our, I want to say, affectionate mind, that the affection that we have for our life and for all things, the allness and the wholeness and the boundlessness of things, that if we actually have a way of expressing that and being conscious of it, that it's extremely nourishing and helpful in what often seems like a very hard-won life. We all face a lot of difficulty, and it's very helpful to have some corner of our life that is devotional in some way, without making it a particular thing. Bow to anything or anybody, and just surrender to the whole thing. That's what bowing is. Just surrendering. And that's what being willing to light something, being willing to offer oneself and create a situation in my world, creating a world that has some meaning. So I think that's an aspect of Zen practice also. But not for everybody. You will meet people who are a little more austere, I would say. But my teacher was not austere at all. And I'm not either. So you're getting a soft flavor of Zen, which isn't what everybody does, but that's what we're getting.
I'm so grateful for that softer approach and thank goodness it isn't just all about the words in this practice that we are sitting together. I was thinking about, for some reason this reminded me, the struggle with the language, and that I went to a Unitarian Universalist service once in Arcata, and I was struck by, you know, because they're very political, and I was struck by how they were trying to define who this gathering was, and they were kept defining by what they were not. You know, they were not, you know, against this, or they were not, you know. But I was also struck by, are they ever going to stop talking?
That was my experience with the Quakers too many years ago. I loved the silence, and then someone would stand up and speak, and I'd think, oh, they're ruining it. But it's a different practice.
No, I respect them very much.
Yes, I do too.
Everything they do.
Yeah, they do great work, wonderful work. Well, speaking of political, which I always vow not to have anything to do with in here, but this is from the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, and it's a Western Soto Zen Buddhist statement on the climate crisis. And it's really, really good. And although George Will in the New York Times on Sunday wrote a scathing article about climate change and how ridiculous it is to even talk about such a thing, I want to make this available to you all too. See what Soto Zen is thinking about. You don't have to take it if you don't want it. And this is a book, a magazine that comes out twice a year. It comes out from Korea, and it's sent as a gift to us, and it's Buddhism and culture, and it means Korean culture. So there are little articles in here about the cherry trees and the beautiful, beautiful temples and training places and food, different kinds of food. It's quite interesting. So if somebody wants to take it and bring it back and share it, it's here.
Angel.
Yes.
I was reading an article about Tibetan Zen today in a Lion's Roar, and it was mentioning some things, because I'm referring to an article that dealt with between 7th and 9th century. And there were a couple of things that I was not aware of. One was that Korean Zen monks were involved in a lot of Chinese monastic work, which was really interesting to me. And I learned a long time ago about a very famous debate that took place in Tibet, in which a Chinese master faced off with this Indian master, and Tibet favored the Indian, and that this would continue for centuries, that the Tibetans would always kind of prefer the Indian lineage to the Chinese lineage. Mm-hmm. But the whole article is fascinating because it's all based on scrolls from Dunhuang.
Mm-hmm.
And the research that this fellow has done in talking about a lineage that was in Tibet as early as the 7th century and was, you know, a meditation lineage that went back to
Tibetan Zen.
Tibetan Zen?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was Buddhist nuns from Korea that brought Buddhism to Japan way, way back in the very beginning, which I always think is a really cool thing to know. Just for personal reasons, I think it's super. Korean, and Korean Zen is very intense. And there are several huge old temples that are very beautiful, and the practice is still going on. Yeah, but that's fascinating, Tibetan Zen. That's very cool.
There's still so much research and scholarly work that's being done.
Yes.
That I think the perfect use of light.
Yes.
increasingly more light to so many issues, like, for example, women in Buddhism, mm-hmm. would be something that's unfolded gradually over these last, you know, 3 decades.
Yes.
And we're not at the bottom of that, to be sure.
Oh, we're just starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
it's a good
you.
Time to be alive and to learn these things.
It is.
Because I think of, you know, I think of these things in terms of how it's benefited me and my understanding.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Gratitude, much gratitude. Yeah. Well, it's after 8.
I have some announcements.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs to sign this piece of paper for the friends. It's a waiver of liability, holding them harmless to be here. So they won't. If you need to take it home and have your lawyer read it over and bring it back next week, we have 2 weeks to do this.
But what it means is that if we break a leg, they're not. We can't sue them. Isn't that what it means?
Right.
Yeah.
Sign for all of us somehow?
No, we tried that and they came back and said no, we need each. They hoped one person could do that, but no.
That means there's a new person that comes in, we have to have them sign?
No, if we just pass them around for 2 weeks, we're good. And then Saturday, the 14th of May, up at Connie's, I'll be requesting someone to help Connie set up the sitting room. So if you could think about whether you'd be able to do that. And then the third announcement is I haven't gotten any votes yet on my big announcement. So
sounds good.
If,
sounded good when you came up.
Yeah.
What's your big announcement?
The vote.
She wants a vote on that.
On the proposals related to Sashin. Maybe I didn't make it clear.
I guess I didn't even see the email. Was it the email?
Yes. Yeah, with the minutes. I'll talk to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll put them on the chair up there and take one. You won't pass them around.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Thanks, Wendy.
Yes.
Thank you for standing up for us.